So we've been looking at this series, Move for Mission, and as we've looked through this series, I hope you've begun to see that movement is throughout the whole of the Bible. In fact, 2/3 of God's name is go. You've heard of dad jokes? This is like dad preaching. I can now officially say cheesy things like that where you go, oh, yeah, so it is. Yeah, that's great. And even we're carrying on this sort of sense of movement with Christmas, aren't we? This sense of journey. And Christmas is about that. It's about this journey of God coming to us. When we read through at the Gospels and we see the story of Jesus, Jesus is someone who spends all of his time walking around constantly. And when you look at the journeys that he makes, he just walks hundreds of miles throughout the Gospels as he sees God's kingdom just sprout up everywhere that he goes. It's an incredible thing. And as you look through these stories, it can be quite intimidating, can't it? I believe, was it last week Henry was looking at Nehemiah? Yeah? I mean, what an incredible guy. What an incredible story. Some of the stories that we've heard, Abraham, these courageous people of incredible faith. I want to ask you a question this morning. What kind of follower are you? Is there a follower of Jesus in the Bible? Is there someone who has seen the purposes of God enacted through their movement, who you really identify with? Is there? Now, I've done quite a bit of time in university studying the Bible, looking at Paul. And I love Paul. What an incredible character. And he lived this life of just being so far away from God, of persecuting and killing Christians. And then he has this amazing experience. And from that moment on, he is just all out for Jesus. He is just sold 100%. I don't know if you've ever read from the life of Paul, but he is just an incredible guy. He is ferocious in his determination, and he writes these incredible letters, and he just pushes on and sees this amazing thing happen as he follows Jesus. And I've always wanted to be like Paul. You know, he's eloquent, he's well-written, he's quite spiky, he likes a good argument. I like a good argument from time to time. Probably just because I'm a bit of a big mouth. I'm a bit of a middle child. I've got 5 brothers and sisters, and I'm right in the middle, so I'm always trying to get attention and find noise. I'm always a little bit noisy. That was sort of bred into me. Sorry, it's a bit of therapy, isn't it, this morning? I've always looked at Paul and thought, oh, what an incredible disciple. I don't know if you have someone who you look at in the Bible and you think, man, I wish I was like them. But the truth is, I feel a little bit like a budget version of Peter. Have you ever read about Peter? I mean, he's the first one out of the boat. He's always there. He's always with Jesus, right in the center of the action. He's always the one to speak out, to be courageous. And he just constantly seems to get it wrong, doesn't he? He's always so close, yet so far at the same time. He's on the mountain when Jesus is transfigured and Elijah comes and he starts talking about building tents. And Jesus is like, what are you on about, Peter? He has this incredible confession where he talks about who Jesus is, yet he is the one who, after the cross, denies Jesus and says, I don't know him, when a little slave girl comes and asks him. Not a soldier. There's no interrogation where Peter has to hide. A little slave girl comes and says, do you know Jesus? He's like, no, I don't. Peter is one of the disciples who always seems to be with Jesus, always. Yet, Peter is the disciple to whom Jesus says, get behind me, Satan. That's pretty strong words, isn't it? He's always sort of in the mix, and yet a million miles from where he should be. And I respond to that a bit more. I don't know about you, but I started following Jesus, and I resonate with that Winston Churchill quote, you know, success is moving from failure to failure without loss of enthusiasm. I feel like that describes my life as a Christian, that I've just pushed on and just always kind of made a bit of a hash of it, bodged my way through like a bit of a dodgy DIY job. I think of some of the different things that happened when I started going to church. I remember inviting all my friends from school to come and hear this evangelist at my church. There was about 20 of them. But what I did is I lied. I told them that my band had a gig. And I was like, come and see my band have a gig. And they were like, oh, yeah, that's awesome. So they turned up at church en masse, loads of them. And they're like, there's loads of people here. Are there other bands playing? No, just our band. Yeah, just our band. And then we played one song, and then the speaker got up and spoke for about half an hour. And all my friends were just like, you lied to us. That is not a good tactic. Don't use that. Don't lie to your friends to get them on the Alpha course. That does not work. I have foot-in-mouth disease. I think Peter had this as well. I just consistently say stupid stuff. When I came for my interview for this job here as worship pastor, it was a terrifying experience. And it was. You're scary people. And I had to lead some worship with the band, and I had Nikki was playing, who you might know, one of our worship leaders. Colin was on drums, Joe was on keys, Mike Dore was on bass, and I led some songs and played them through, and I played 10,000 Reasons. It was brand new. I was down with the kids. I was playing all the latest songs, and I played this song, and everyone was like, oh, that's a good song. We don't do that at St. B's yet. Now you're probably thinking, please, let's not do that again. We've done that song enough. We've sung that song 10,000 times. Now let's move on. But I played that song, and just sort of chit-chat, end of the day, I'm about to head off to go back up north where I was living. And we're talking like, do you like that song? I was like, oh, yeah. I said, I really, you know, to be honest, Matt Redman, a lot of his albums, there's like one or two good songs, and there's a lot that I skip through. But this album, it's actually a good one. To which point, Nikki instantly just went, do you know Colin used to be Matt Redman's drummer? I walked out, I called up Rachel, I was like, I've not got the job. In fact, I think there may be a restraining order against me coming here again. I've done it again. I've said so many stupid things. But focusing back on that denial of Jesus from Peter, Jesus is with Peter. He's showing them all this stuff. He even starts to tell the disciples all about his death, all about what's going to happen, and they still don't get it. And still, when the chips are down, Peter walks away. We're going to read a story this morning, and in this story, Peter has come post the cross and gone, do you know what? Let's go fishing. All that other stuff we've been doing, all those miracles, all that teaching, all that incredible stuff, let's just go back fishing. Let's just go back to where we once were. And Nikki is now going to come and give us our reading. It's from John 21, and it's verses 15 to 19.
On page 1030, if you need a church Bible, if you just raise your hand and somebody on the hospitality team will be glad to bring you one. John 21, verse 15, Jesus reinstates Peter. When they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? Yes, Lord, he said, you know that I love you. So Jesus said, feed my lambs. Again, Jesus said, Simon, son of John, do you love me? He answered, yes, Lord. You know that I love you. Jesus said, take care of my sheep. The third time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time, do you love me? He said, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my sheep. Very truly I tell you, when you were younger, you dressed yourself and went where you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands, and someone else will dress you and lead you where you will not want to go. Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. And then he said to him, follow me.
So this passage ends. Oh, just keep that stage. Wow, it's very exciting. This is the sort of thing I was talking about. Exactly the sort of thing I was talking about. The first time I led worship in my home church, we had a similar stage, and it had this really nice beading sort of around the edge. And as I was getting up to preach, to worship lead, for the very first time, I tripped up and just snapped it all off. And there was just like shards of wood everywhere that I had to sort of dance around as I was leading. Hilarious. You had to be there though. So we're just going to work through this passage, verse by verse. This means that this isn't a sermon with 3 points beginning with P, because Jesus forgot to put that in this passage, which is a bit annoying. But this passage ends with that call, follow me, follow me. And as we've been looking through this series, Jesus calls us to follow him. Jesus calls us to move in order to see his kingdom expand, in order to fulfill what he calls us to follow him, to move. But this is that story after Peter has denied Jesus. In fact, moving on from this story, we see even though Peter has this incredible encounter, he still keeps messing it up. In fact, if you read the book of Galatians, Peter has this massive argument with Paul about welcoming in Jewish and non-Jewish believers and what they eat and all these different things. And again, Peter is on the wrong side and is shouting his mouth off yet again. So even after this story, Peter still manages to be a heroic failure, which is very British, isn't it? I feel like I'm a football fan, and watching the England team, that's what we are. We're a bunch of heroic failures. Come so close yet so far, year on year. So maybe, just maybe, Peter resonates with you. And maybe as we look through this story, there's some things in this that will just speak to you about Jesus reinstating you, about Jesus calling you, weak, feeble, fallible as you are, to follow him and be a disciple. Does that sound good? Yeah. Okay, let's go for it. So, when they had finished eating, the theology of breakfast. I mean, isn't it incredible that Jesus sits down and eats breakfast? Just think about that. That's quite a casual throwaway line that we don't think about, isn't it? Jesus has, he has fish for breakfast. A little bit weird. Not my choice. But God made flesh, this very thing that we're going to look at around this time of Christmas, sits and eats with his disciples. And I guess that's the first thing to say, that in all your triumphs and in all your failures, in your incredible great things that you're doing that God has called you to do, and in all those times where you totally fluff it, Jesus wants to come and be with you. That our God is a near God. Jesus doesn't appear to the disciples after he's been raised from the dead, floating 3 feet off the ground, shrouded in light with a big long dress on. But he sits and he eats with them. He gets close to them. God is with us. We don't worship a theological position. We worship a resurrected person, don't we? And that influences us. That influences us. I say this a lot to our worship team, that we worship a person, that we worship face to face. That is the sort of worship that we have. That's why we use emotional language in our worship, and we don't think that our worship should just be us singing through doctrine and us just, showing off how much we know about God, because it's a personal, face-to-face thing. That's just for free. The theology of breakfast. You can have that. Jesus said to Simon Peter, so Peter has two names because he's greedy. There's two reasons for this. The first one, you might not know, it's a very pragmatic reason. So Simon was probably Shimeon. There was an H sound in there. And in Greek, in ancient Greek, especially Koine Greek, which is the Greek of the Bible, quite a bit different than modern day Greek, there isn't an H sound. There isn't a H. Sometimes there's a rough breathing that they can have over certain words, but there isn't an H sound. That's also why Saul becomes Paul, because his name was Sheol. And if he's going to go and work with people who speak Greek, who don't speak Aramaic, they're not going to be able to pronounce his name. So Peter has this name, Petros, rock. But it's an easy name for them to say as well. It's sort of indicative of where Jesus is calling Peter. He's calling this little fisherman from a little town to go and speak to people of different languages, to cross cultures, to cross barriers. That's quite an incredible thing, that just to think about that Jesus picks one of his disciples who has a quirky name that other people can't say, and for a very, very pragmatic reason, gives him a new one. But you probably know the other reason. Simon means reed, and Peter means rock. Jesus is redefining Peter and who he is, his very identity. But interestingly, in this story, and it's Jesus who gives him the name Peter early in the gospel, Jesus addresses Peter as Simon. Simon, son of John. He reminds him of his roots. I don't think that's Jesus lording it over him, going, "Oh, you weak one. Oh, weak reed, Simon, what have you done?" Actually, I think that's Jesus being quite tender, using his birth name, Simon, Simon, and drawing near to Peter, even though he's just messed up. "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" What does that "more than these" mean? Well, it could actually mean three things grammatically. First thing is, do you love me more than these disciples love me? I think that's probably our most common, like, surface interpretation. Do you love me more than they do? And Peter is always like that. He's always the one pushing himself forward. In fact, earlier in the Gospel of John, in chapter 13, he's the one who says, "I will lay down my life for you," when Jesus talks about the fact he's going to come and be arrested. He's the one who steps up. "I love you more than these. I will lay down my life for you." And what is Jesus' response? "You will betray me. You say you love me more than these, but you will betray me. You who claim the greatest love." It could also mean more than you love this fishing. Do you love me more than these things around you? This word "these," there's "these" and "those," they're called demonstratives. Close things and far away things, "these." And Peter's just been fishing and he's surrounded by fishing stuff. Jesus is like, "Do you love me more than this? Seriously, after all these years together, you just go back fishing? Do you love me more than fishing?" Anyone into fishing? It's not a very North London thing, is it, fishing? Or it could mean, "Do you love me more than these disciples? Do you love me more than you love your fellow disciples?" Peter's called the disciples, even in his messed up state here, he's showing the leader that he is. He calls them to come fishing with him. Even in this messed up state, Peter is still the leader. I don't know if the other disciples know about the denial or not at this point, but they follow him. Jesus is like, "Seriously, you just want to walk away from me and hang out with your buddies? What's going on? Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" I think he's reminding him of that statement in 13, in chapter 13. "I will lay my life down. I'm the one who'll stand up for you. Simon, son of John, did you really mean that? I know that you messed up, but did you mean that?" Peter replies, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." And Jesus says, "Feed my lambs." What a quirky response that is. Just think about that for a second. So Jesus has come face to face with Peter. He's reminding him of his accusation. He's reminding him of his words. "Do you love me more than these?" Peter says, yes, of course I love you. And Jesus' response is, "I commission you to go and do this." Throughout the Gospel of John, Jesus calls himself the Good Shepherd. He says, "I have my sheep and they know my voice," in chapter 10, "and no one will snatch them out of my hand. They are my sheep." He also says, "I have other sheep outside of this pen that you do not know about," when he's talking to the Jewish people, because he's talking about how his kingdom and his family is going to expand to take in everyone, how he's come to bring this rescue for all of humanity. Jesus is the Good Shepherd. And he says to this failure, just after he's reminded him that he's failed, "Feed my lambs." He uses lambs at this point, and the other two times he asks the question, Jesus uses the word sheep. And there's a sense, again, of that gentleness, of that tenderness. "Feed my little lambs." Again, if Peter was thinking that Jesus meant the disciples when he said, "Do you love me more than these?" Jesus could have been referencing the disciples here. "You feed my little lambs." Peter was known as the oldest of the disciples. "Feed my lambs. Look after my lambs, Peter." Again, Jesus said, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" He answered, "Yes, Lord. You know that I love you." again, it's this tenderness of Jesus, this tenderness of the good shepherd, of the loving shepherd coming. And you might know that there's actually different words used for love here. And C.S. Lewis wrote a really unhelpful book about different words for love in Greek, but he uses classical Greek rather than common Greek that the New Testament is written in. And the truth is, these two words, one word is agape, and that's this sort of big, expansive, faithful love. And this other word is phileo, and that is more like a brotherly, family love. So Jesus says, do you agape me? And Peter says, I phileo you. Now these words are used interchangeably throughout the Gospel of John. When it talks about how God the Father loves Jesus the Son, it uses both of these words at different points. When Jesus talks about the love that he has, again, he uses these different words at different points. So there's a way that they're just synonyms, that they're different ways of saying the same thing. But there's also this sense of Jesus using this big, grand word, and Peter saying, I love you, brother. I love you, brother. There's a closeness and a tenderness and a smallness and a scaredness to Peter's response. Some people have said that phileo is more like I care for you, but I don't personally think that that's right. I think actually it's Peter using the family word for love. He's been reminded of his failure. And this word, agape, this big, powerful word for love, he's like, I love you, brother. There's a tenderness, there's a meekness to Peter that we've not seen anywhere else in the gospel. We've not seen Peter act like that before. Jesus says, take care of my sheep. That word take care is actually shepherd. Shepherd my sheep. This is even stronger than the words before. Jesus says, do what I have done. I am the good shepherd. Shepherd my sheep. These are my sheep. These are my people. They know my voice. Shepherd them. I guess there's two things to say to that. One is, as Christians, we need to be reading the Gospels constantly and looking at what Jesus did and going, that is the life that we're called to. We're supposed to model what the good shepherd did, what he said. That's what we're supposed to live out. That's why as a church, we're obsessed with mission. And why we want to move up to the high road. Because it's not just about us meeting and reading through doctrine and us having a great time and singing great songs and it being this inward thing. Because Jesus didn't come and spend 3 years just with his 12 disciples having meetings once a week that were really great. And his disciples were inviting their friends and going, you should come here, Jesus. He's a really good speaker. But Jesus went from house to house, from town to town, from road to road, reaching out to people. Bringing his sheep like a shepherd, going and gathering them from all the places, from all the highways and all the byways, bringing them in, come back, come to me. I am the good shepherd. I will care for you. I will shepherd you. I will look after you. And get this, get the outrageousness of this. Jesus then turns to this failure, Peter, and says, shepherd my sheep. Do you feel like you qualify to be a servant of God? Do you feel like you qualify to be called a shepherd? The word pastor is in my job title, and the word pastor just means shepherd. And it's a scary word to have that as part of my job, that I'm called to look after and lovingly lead people and be gracious with them and gentle with them like the good shepherd Jesus. I'm called to lay down my life to be sacrificial, to put their safety before my own. That's a scary word, and that's what Jesus calls us to, fallible and weak and imperfect as we are. Do what I do, Jesus says. The third time, Jesus says to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time, do you love me? He said, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my sheep. Now Jesus here switches. Whereas every other time Jesus has been saying agape and Peter has been saying phileo, Jesus says, do you phileo me? Now notice in Peter's response, in the passage it says he was annoyed because he said three times. So even though there's different words, it's clearly the same meaning. But there's a sense of tenderness, of Jesus hears Peter's response. I love you, brother. And Jesus says, do you care for me, brother? There's an intimacy there. There's a closeness. He mirrors his words. And then he combines the two sayings from before. Feed my lambs, shepherd my sheep. Jesus, the third time, says, feed my sheep. And I think when he says, follow me, this is what he means. Jesus went around loving people. Jesus went around healing the sick. Jesus went around caring for people. He went around welcoming in the outcasts, redefining who was in and who was out so that he could welcome people in, hanging out with the people he shouldn't hang out. Me and my friend Chris, we like to come up with alternative verses for Our God is Greater. I don't know if you ever play games like this, but we think there's always certain things that we always talk about Jesus doing, like, you know, you open water, you turn into wine, open the eyes of the blind. And we thought of lines like, demons you cast into swine, spit in the eyes of the blind. That's what he did. That's what he did. We're called to do these outrageous acts of love and generosity and openness, fueled by the power and the Spirit of God to bring healing and reconciliation, to gather in the sheep. You don't seem that impressed by my verses. Maybe we'll leave them off. We won't add them in. When Jesus says, follow me, when he comes tenderly to us and reminds us of our failures, he commissions us. There's not a sense of Jesus going, oh, no, no, that's not you. You're amazing. You're a great. I'm going to give you a brass plaque for you to put on your door, and then you can go and do these incredible things. Jesus says, no, no, no. Weak as you are, you can look after my sheep. Now, they're never Peter's sheep. Jesus doesn't say, I'm now giving you my flock. Take my sheep on. That'd be a bit Catholic, I think, if Jesus said that. Jesus says, sorry if you're Catholic, don't worry. Any Catholics here? Jesus says, feed my sheep. Look after my things. There's a sense of we can be really imperfect and infallible because it's not dependent on us anyway. We're just playing a part in what Jesus has done. I can look after my worship team in all my imperfect ways, in my terrible hold of what my diary has in it, in my awful email skills, in my constant administrative confusion, in my constantly shouting my mouth off and saying wrong things all the time and tripping over my own words as they tumble out of my mouth. Because they're Jesus' sheep. And all I'm doing is helping Jesus. All I'm doing is giving them a bit of hay. That's cows, isn't it? All I'm doing is feeding them. Is just loving them. Just playing my part. These are Jesus' sheep. Very truly, Jesus says, I tell you, when you were younger, you dressed yourself and went where you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go. Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. Then he said to him, follow me. What a punchline. Jesus tells him the cost. Jesus tells Peter that he's going to make the ultimate sacrifice. That stretch out your hands is an allusion to crucifixion. Peter, you will follow my path exactly. You will be crucified. This is the cost of following me. Follow me. Isn't this just an incredible story? Isn't this just so beautiful? How tender Jesus is. You might have come today, you might come every week and feel like such an inadequate person. You might feel like the worst disciple there ever was. You might feel like you struggle to call yourself a Christian at points. You might feel like you have to lie in order to get people to come to church like I did. You might constantly make mistakes. You might let another week pass by and think, oh my gosh, I didn't pray or read my Bible once. You might feel so far away. And Jesus comes to you and says, do you love me? Because ultimately, the quality that he wants from you to be part in his kingdom is not for you to be successful, but it's for you to love him. It is for you to love him with open heart. Now, some of us might feel a bit British and like we can't say that we love God. Tough. Two greatest commandments, love God with all your heart, soul, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. As Christians, we are all about love. Our God is love. That's doctrine. That's the highest form of theology we can have, to love God. Karl Barth, a famous systematic theologian, who I've never read any of his stuff because it's very dry, famously was asked to sum up his theology, and he said, Jesus loves me, this I know, for the Bible tells me so. And if in all of your hunger and your thirst for God, if in all of your seeking after him and wanting to get close to him and to read the Bible more and to know more and to see more of his spirit at work in your life, if you're not growing in that love, if you can't turn to Jesus and say, Lord, you know all things. You know my successes. You know my failures. You know the times I've denied you. You know what a screw up I am. And you know that I love you. If you're not growing in that love, you're not doing it right. And that is such an easy burden to carry. To just ask God, let me help. Help me to love you more. Help me to love you more. Of all the disciples, Jesus picks the one who screwed up the most. Throughout the Gospels and ultimately after the cross, he picks the biggest failure, singles him out, the one most aware of his failings, the one who's feeling all meek and mild and in himself, and he commissions him in front of the others. So what is it about that story as we go into a time of ministry that resonates with you? Can I have the band back up? Do you need to know God with you? Do you need to know that God wants to come and have breakfast with you? That might be where you're at. You might feel like God is far away. We'd love to pray for that this morning. Maybe you need a new name. As I was praying, I really felt this morning that maybe that was a significant thing for people. Maybe there's something about the meaning of your name. Maybe you have a name that was given to you that is a relative's name, and you feel like, oh yeah, I always do this because that's what it's like in my family. Maybe God wants to come and give you a new name. Maybe your name reminds you of your failures. Maybe it's your reputation. God wants to come and give people some new names this morning. And I hope that the prayer team are ready to respond to that and just speak prophetically into that if that's you. Do you question your love for Jesus? Does he say agape to you and you respond with this little meek phileo? Come this morning. Come and ask God to help you to love him more. Maybe you need to think, what are the sheep that God is calling you to love and care for? When Jesus says, feed my sheep, when he says, follow me, the good shepherd, what does that look like for you in your life? Are there specific people? Is that members of your family who are far away from God? Is that your co-workers? Is that a group of people? Do you feel called to a particular, the prisoners through the prison mission community to go and shepherd them and love them? Is there a specific people that God is calling you to feed, to tenderly look after and love? Maybe the kicker is really at the end. That actually, Jesus outlines the exact cost to Peter. He doesn't say, follow me. Oh, by the way, all this is going to happen. That's the sort of thing I'd do to get someone into church. Jesus says, all this is going to happen. This is the cost. Now follow me. Maybe the cost has been really high for you to be a Christian. Maybe you've lost family because they're of another faith. Maybe you've turned down jobs. Maybe you've turned down relationships. Maybe you're in a relationship that you need to end. Whatever that cost is, I just urge you to follow Jesus because he's a good shepherd. And he comes in the midst of our flaws and failures, and he tenderly loves us and calls us to join the family trade.